Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Today is Wednesday, September 21st, 2016. My co-host, Stan Friedman, will not be with us today. Stan is on a plane, probably a Delta plane, flying somewhere between Atlanta, Georgia, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, for the Springboard Conference, which is for emerging brands, put on by the great folks at Fisher Zucker and Fishman Public Relations. Really a great event. I really am bummed that I am missing this year's event, because I really do believe it is one of the best events in all of franchising. And if you're not there and listening, that's great. Of course, we know most of our guests do listen to Franchise Today on demand, as it is on demand, accessible at blogtalkradio.com/franchisetodayshow, or right on iTunes as Franchise Today. Coming up in Atlanta, Georgia, is the Franchise Update Leadership and Development Conference. And before that, we'll all be converging on Denver, Colorado. It'll be MFV Expo's Franchise Expo West, which replaced West Coast Franchise Expo, which used to be in the Southern California area. This year, first time in Denver, it should be a fantastic show. We haven't been in Denver in many, many years, and Denver is just such a great entrepreneurial hotbed. I'm sure we'll be pulling from a very wide base of population out into the Rockies, certainly north into Wyoming, east into Nebraska, and I even expect some from Northern Texas. So that's the 6/30/8 in Denver, Colorado. Stan will be there. I will be there. I look forward to seeing everybody there. I think it's going to be an absolute great event. So today I have as my guest Jeff Odo. Jeff is the president of Citywide Maintenance and the founder of president of Citywide Franchise. Citywide is a management company for the building maintenance industry with many, many locations, been in business a long time. I'm not even going to get into that because I want Jeff to get into that. Jeff, welcome to Franchise Today.
Paul, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Thanks, and certainly want to thank the great folks at All Points Public Relations for referring us to you. They've done a great job for us. Of course, they do a great job for their clients as well. You know, as I was putting together the show, Jeff, I looked at the years that Citywide has been in business. It's a family business. I came up with the title for the show, Modernizing a Decades-Old Business for Family and Community. And I think there's a great, you know, story to be told here. But before we get into, you know, what Citywide is all about, you know, tell us about, you know, you growing up in the business and eventually getting to the position that you're in today. Two different entities, obviously, now that you've been franchising for a while. Tell us what it was like growing up, what you did in the business, and where you got to where you are today.
All right, great. I feel like I should just kind of lay down on a sofa and share with you all the mental scars of what it was like to grow up in a family-run business. As you can imagine, you know, my father was a Depression baby, and Depression babies had a different work ethic, and they were on the go all the time, and you were never allowed really to lay around and watch TV or hang out. You know, if you've got time to be on the sofa, boy, get up and go clean the garage. But, Dad, I just cleaned the garage yesterday. Clean it again. You know, and so it was interesting. He had us doing everything. My dad was great. He really was. He worked all of the time. He went 20 years, his first 20 years, without a day of vacation. He'd come home every morning around 1 to 3 o'clock in the morning. He'd wake us up, say our prayers. And by the time 7 o'clock rolled around the next morning, he'd be gone again. So we never really saw him during the week. But Friday nights was family night, and we had 100% of his attention. And Saturdays, we always went to work with my dad. And Sundays, you know, was family day, and great family life, and enjoyed working and getting to spend that quality time. So it's certainly not about quantity with him, but it was about quality. And I have two other brothers. I'm the middle child, and the three of us, man, we just had a really, really good time. So he was a big believer, and we never received allowances. We had to do everything for any money. So every week we would clean trash cans or steel wool metal desk. And he was smart enough. He'd pay us in brand new dollars, so like Susan B. Anthony coins or fresh, crisp $2 bills. And he'd put them in like these presentation boxes. So it was so cool. You didn't want to spend the money. So
wow.
Not only did we have the desire to make the money, but then we didn't want to spend it either. So we did all the jobs. He was always, his intention was always to have his three sons in the business. And I think in retrospect, you know, as much as we didn't want to do a lot of the jobs in the beginning, it taught us a tremendous amount and provided a baseline for all of us to come in after college and hit the road running.
Well, that's really great. And of course, your dad's name is Frank, correct?
Yes.
And he started
yes.
this in 1961 as a janitorial company. Wow, what a great time! What a great story. So you went off to college, and when you came back, did you jump right into the business? Give us a little bit of a walkthrough there.
Yeah, three boys. His opinion was that three boys cannot work in the same company. You can't have three bosses. Three brothers will kill one another. And so he had at the time 15 different companies. And
wow.
So my older brother was in the janitorial company at the time. So he said, you can get involved in any of the other companies. And so I took the distribution, manufacturing of chemicals and supply business, and we grew it very successfully, 600% in 6 years, ended up selling it to a national company, and I asked if I could take over the janitorial service business so that Rick could work full-time into the development company. And my older brother Rick was running the development or the janitorial service. So that's how I got into the janitorial services, was because there was such a relationship between it and the supply distribution manufacturing business that it was a natural for me to take over, which allowed him to go do something else. So that's how I got into the business.
That's interesting. It's an interesting philosophy, and probably one that's very spot on. I couldn't imagine three brothers working together in the same business. There, no matter how close you would be, I would imagine there would have to be some type of disagreements, and then people wouldn't even know, you know, which brother to talk to. I could see them definitely trying to play some sides against the middle. So you're
Paul, you
you're
see it every day, though.
Yeah, you do.
I'm sorry.
You do.
Yeah, you see it every day, and it's for the listeners who are out there, and not to have a strong delineation between leaders, it makes it for a difficult business. So I think it's one of the greatest blessings that he gave us was the autonomy to run our own business. Now, we're still all owned collectively by a holding company, so we each own a third of each other's businesses, but we each run our own businesses, and it's been a wonderful way for us to have harmony amongst the family.
That's excellent. You know, I've done some consulting over the years in business, you know, family succession planning, not on the legal side or the financial side. It was on the visionary side. An interesting article and segment that I did called What Would Pop Do? And it sounds like Pop, in this case, gave you a lot of his wisdom. And I imagine you're using, and your brothers are using a lot of that today. I mean, just the fact holding company, each own a third of each other's company. I think that's just tremendous. So what year was it that you took over at the janitorial company?
1989, January of 1989.
Okay. Well, judging by
that
your
was
picture,
the
you had to be a teenager.
Yeah. Well, I just got out of college. Went straight into the family business.
That's great. And at what point that did the business start changing that made you start looking ahead at, you know, diversifying services and eventually getting into franchise?
I don't think it was much the industry as much as it was some real soul searching. I was really, I hate to admit this to the world, but I was miserable. I hated the janitorial industry, not because I thought I was better than it, but I really struggled with the fact that we surrounded ourselves with a lot of entry-level people that really don't care about the company and or the clients as much as, you know, this is their first job or it's a job that they have to have, and there's high turnover in that business. And as a middle child, I'm a people pleaser. I want to give our clients just a world-class experience. And when there's this high turnover, it's really hard to truly satisfy the client. And so I was struggling. I was personally really, really reeling with what the right thing is to do. And I remember going to my family every Wednesday. We have family board meetings, and we all go have lunch, and then we have a 2.5-hour session afterwards talking about budgets and forecasts and cash projections and all those kind of things. And I went to them this one Wednesday, and I said, you know, I love you. I love the family. I love the opportunity. I'm not trying to be ungrateful, but I'm not willing to do this for the rest of my life. This is just not fun at all for me. And I shared that with them. I think that they all thought I was just venting. They didn't think I was really serious about doing something differently. I'm not sure I would have done something different, but between that Wednesday and the following Wednesday, a man named Mr. Cho came and knocked on my door. And Mr. Cho said, hey, do you guys subcontract any work? And I said, no, subcontracting is bad. Go away. And he said, no, subcontracting's good. And I've got a great group of people. I lost my only account here in Kansas City. I don't want to go back to Dallas. Will you give me an opportunity? And I really liked this guy. Something about him. He was an honest, sincere guy. And so we spent a little bit more time talking. And I said, I tell you what, Mr. Cho, meet me up. I've got 5 high-rise office buildings at the airport. Meet me up at the airport. I'll show you one of the buildings and see if you're interested. He says, no, I take all tonight. I was like, no, you're pushing. You know, no, you can meet me up there. Well, so Paul, we loaded up our trucks. You know, in those days, we would go pick up temporary labor people, and that's how we would clean the buildings. And so we all pull up with our temporary labor in our cars, and sure enough, Mr. Cho's standing there at attention with his entire team in uniform. And I look in my car, and I'm looking at these are the day laborers that are going to be cleaning the building versus Mr. Cho. And I got out of the car. I talked to one of our other guys, Joe Choplin. I said, you know, it's in God's hands now. At this point, this is either the smartest thing I'm going to do or the dumbest thing I've ever done. But walk Mr. Cho through all 5 buildings. They're his. I shook Mr. Cho's hand, and I said, I trust you. And I took. We started taking all the day laborers back. And I went back to the family that next Wednesday, and I said, you're not going to believe what happened. I tell them the whole story. And, you know, a lot of skepticism, of course, but sure enough, that's what allowed us to make the evolution. I wish I could tell you I was the smartest guy in the world and I had this vision, but I believe the change was divine intervention. My father believes that the change was out of pure laziness. I should have continued to do it the old-fashioned way, but he's come around now. He sees that what the difference is when our focus is no longer on hourly employees and our focus is now on the client. It's made a huge difference.
You know, that's very interesting, the way that came about. And I would have to say you're the smartest man in the room for seizing that opportunity and seeing the possibilities in it. Having had 7 years worth of consulting experience in commercial cleaning myself, I could certainly appreciate the story. I also appreciate the work that's done, whether it be the minimum wage employees, you know, cleaning restrooms all the way down to some very, what I look at as sophisticated hard floor care and stuff like that. It's really a fascinating industry. We look at office buildings every day and don't think about those millions and millions of square feet in there that are basically assets for the building owner. And obviously, as you made the switch to focusing on the client, I'm sure they greatly appreciated that. So Mr. Cho is in, he's got his team in place. When did you start to diversify to what Citywide is today.
You would be amazed to hear that we were in jeopardy of losing those accounts, and that's why I felt like I don't have a whole lot to lose. We're going to lose these accounts anyway, so let's give it a shot. Within 2 weeks, so now I've gone back to the family, told them what's going on. Mm-hmm. Within 2 weeks of that, the customer calls and says, "Hey, Jeff, I don't know what you guys are doing, but it's fantastic. By the way, we've got a leak up here in the roof. Do you guys by any chance happen to know anybody who can help us with a leak?" And, of course, in sales you say, "Yeah, of course I can take care of that for you." And then you hang up the phone and try to figure out, well, how am I going to do it? Well, it just so happens I happen to own a third of a construction company and development company. I call my brother and say, "Do you have somebody?" "Yes, of course. Get him up there today." So, Paul, they charge us, call it $100. We charge the client exactly $100. I was scared to death to mark it up at all. And then they were like, "This is awesome. What else can you do?" It's like, "Well, I don't know. What else do you want?" "Well, it ruined all these ceiling tiles. The leak ruined all these ceiling tiles. Can you replace the ceiling tiles?" "Absolutely." And it just was like the aha moment. The light bulb went on. It's like, this is fantastic. I'm going to use all these independent business owners, contractors who are already in the business of cutting grass and painting buildings and providing pest control services. I don't have to be the smartest guy in the room knowing how to do all these services. All we have to do is serve the client's needs and find a good contractor that we vet and we hold accountable and save the client time, and that's how it just naturally, very quickly evolved, into us providing additional services. And little by little, you know, I felt comfortable. Well, maybe I could add a little 5% profit on it, and there was 10% profit. And, you know, before long, you get to I can't charge them more than what they could do it on their own, but I certainly could charge them the same price as if they would go find a contractor themselves.
Sure, and then they have what I like to refer to as the one butt to kick blood. If they're unhappy with something, they got one person to go to. If they want new service, they got one person to go to. They want additional service, they got one person to go to. I mean, that's a tremendous luxury for facility managers and property owners today.
Especially if they're not paying a premium for it. If you can provide the same scope of work for the same price, but we will manage the details on behalf of the client, then it really is. It's a great model, and actually that's what it's propelled us. So you can fast forward from that day. We were cleaning 3 million square feet, probably a little under 3 million square feet a night. It took us 35 years to get to 3 million square feet a night. Once we changed to Mr. Cho, and once we started focusing on the client, we went, after 35 years to get to 3 million, in the next 15 years, we'll do over 200 million square feet of office cleaning tonight.
That
and
is
it's all because of changing
figure.
The model.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Astounding figure. That's an astounding figure. So, you know, at some point as you're growing, you made the decision to franchise. When did that occur?
Okay, well, you know how I said I should lay on the sofa and tell you all my problems? I really feel like I'm starting to share more. I was unhappy again, and I'm a happy guy, so I don't know why both of my stories, but I was unfulfilled, and I was in a group called Vistage or Tech in those days. It's 14 CEOs get together, and we're having phenomenal success. And I'm going to my group of CEOs, and I'm saying, I don't understand why I'm not happier. We're making more money than we've ever had. I'm not, but I'm not fulfilled. And part of the Vistage group is every month you have a speaker, and that month Tom Hill, who was one of the co-authors for Chicken Soup for the Soul, came and spoke to us, and guess what his message was on? His message was all about moving from successful to significant. How do you take a successful business and it be less about materialistic possessions and financial rewards and turn it into something that is beneficial and significant to others? And if you can do that, then you will find the ultimate currency in life, which is happiness. and his whole message resonated with me. I went home and I told my wife that night, like, I've seen the light. This is what I'm called to do. This is I need to stop trying to do this for ourselves and make more money for Jeff and Karen Odo and the brothers. And we need to figure out how to share this model with others. And that's it. I mean, we instantly, I called a buddy of mine who worked for a franchising company, and I said, okay, I need you to come over and help me learn how to start doing franchising. And that's when we got into the franchising business.
And what year was that, approximately?
2001.
Okay.
2001.
Yep. And as you're going through this, I have to come back now and ask, what was your dad's opinion about that at the time when you came back and said, you know, significance over financial success?
Well, you know, everybody is motivated differently. I'm going to go back to that depression baby. When you don't have food on the table and you are your family has to pick and choose what meals you eat and what you don't eat, his motivations are a lot different than my motivations.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a little bit skeptical, of course, of it, because it's, you know, he still believes that he's broke today. He's 80 years old. He comes into the office every single day in a full suit, and it's like, Dad, it's casual days. There's no such thing as casual days, you know.
Right.
It's Friday.
I love it.
No, Dad, it's Friday. It's okay to dress down. Nope. Casual days are for, you know, whatever. So he still thinks he's broke. So the whole family was skeptical, but willing to allow me to try something different. And I know today he would tell you a totally different story than, you know, what we all had concerns about. None of us were 100% sure. I believed in the model, but didn't know it. Today we all know that franchising is by far the best thing that has ever happened for not only our family, but for all the employees that work here at the Citywide Home Office.
That's just fantastic. Obviously, I don't know who your dad is. I would love to meet him. I love that story. I'm jealous. I'm jealous. That is great. I mean, you and your family have been absolutely blessed. I love hearing that. So as you get into that now, obviously you start bringing in franchisees. And we'll talk a little bit about the franchise model. But how did this now start benefiting your clients?
Well, before we talk about benefiting the clients, let's talk about how it benefited the employees. Because
Absolutely.
What the unintended or unintended benefit that I don't think any of us realized is that when you go from a mindset of it's all about doing what we have to do to grow a business here, you really become self-absorbed with your company and what you have to do to be successful here in Kansas City. What franchising allowed us to do was it changed the entire concept and the belief of everybody that said, we are here to provide servant leadership to others. And going from, we're big believers in purpose and what we are should be doing every single day. And most people would agree that they get a lot more fulfillment by being part of a meaningful relationship that is benefiting others and making the difference in the lives of other people. That's more rewarding than just working for a salary that maybe they're going to make a 5%, 10%, 20% bonus, but at the end of the day, really the only people who are benefiting is the owners of Citywide Maintenance. When you start serving other franchisees, they get so excited because they are actually helping other people win rather than just doing day to day. And that epiphany, when everybody started realizing that we're getting paid to serve the needs of our franchisees and that our thought and our focus and our processes, everything needs to change from doing to serving, That's the unintended benefit that franchising provided my whole company, because the whole company feels better about what they are doing. Love it. Love, love, love it. Yep. Anybody who is contemplating franchising should do it for that reason alone.
Well, we need to get you at the front of the franchise conversations up on Capitol Hill and in front of the different people in politics and government that don't understand the franchise model, because a lot of them don't. And it's really a shame, because it is a great model. And I love when I hear the success stories and how it positively affects so many different people. So that was the employees. Now let's shift gears to the clients. How did it benefit them?
Yeah, the clients really benefit from the standpoint that you called it the one butt to kick. Can we talk about the one throat to choke? But what ends up happening is the clients throughout the country have really three choices. They're either going to do business with the big, big companies. These are international behemoths that just can't provide the same quality of service as a local provider. So, A, they're going to do business with the big national and international companies, or they're going to do business with the smaller franchise companies, or they're going to do business with the local independent companies. And oftentimes the local independent companies just don't have the processes and the buying power or the depth in which a larger company can provide. Well, by Citywide having a national footprint now, we've got local owners in the local markets that can serve the clients with a company who's been in business for 55 years and better processes and better systems and better buying power, we actually can. Not only is our model better, because we truly believe we're the only company who represents the clients, everybody else represents themselves. And what I mean by that is if a client were to hire a window washing company and they have a problem, they're going to go talk to the window washing company, and they're going to get into this, you got to figure this the issue out. Well, the window washing company is going to defend the window washing company. With Citywide, we defend the client. If you're not happy with the window washing company, we'll have a new window washing company in here tomorrow. And so by us representing the client, that's very, very unique, having basically a part-time facility manager. Most companies don't need a full-time facility manager, and if they do have a full-time facility manager, they're doing a lot more than managing the vendors. And our model allows the customer to save time and really reduce stress associated with all those vendors.
Sure. This is Franchise Today. I'm Paul Segretto, speaking today with Jeff Odo, president of Citywide Maintenance and founder and president of Citywide Franchise. Franchise Today is brought to you by FRM Solutions, offering best-in-class CRM and document management software specifically for managing franchise relationships. Built in industry-leading Microsoft Dynamics CRM, FRM Solutions are both cloud-based as well as fully accessible from right inside your Outlook inbox. With FRM, you'll spend more time focused on growing the business, while their systems and solutions take care of effectively managing workflows and collaborative communication with prospective and existing franchisees. You can sort, report, and dashboard all of your vital data and empower your team to accelerate franchise sales, streamline your store opening process, better manage day-to-day operations, unit-level performance, and compliance. No hassles, no long-term contracts, no excuses, just solutions, FRM Solutions, on the web at frmsolutions.com. Franchise Today is also brought to you by Franchise Foundry, a business accelerator boasting more than 30 years of experience helping emerging brands bring sustainable growth to their franchise concepts. Foundry utilizes a hybrid coaching and consulting approach that fosters effective solutions for their clients in several aspects of the business, including general operational and change management, traditional and digital marketing, relationship and business management, and of course, franchise recruitment and development. The Foundry also assists brands with raising capital and the exploration of mergers and acquisitions. Learn more about the expanding list of clients across various industry segments at franchisefoundry.com. Woo! Stan usually does that mid-show break, and I didn't realize how much he puts into it. So as we are, you've explained now about the employees, and I love it. Would you call it the one throat to choke? I like that.
Yes.
That's pretty good. You know, commercial cleaning industry has got has a lot of competition in it. And the model, the typical model in commercial cleaning, of course, is through masters, and they're giving or awarding, you know, certain amount of contract revenue to individuals that come in and actually clean, whether it be small businesses or parts of the building, whatever the case might be. And having spent time in that industry, I found that a lot of those people really weren't equipped or experienced when it came to some of the specialty services like hard floor care. And of course, we know these buildings have a tremendous amount of value in hard floor care. How is your model set up? How is it set up from a franchise perspective?
Well, yeah, are you asking specifically how is it different than the franchising models like Janet King or those type of companies?
Yeah,
you're asking?
Because I imagine there's a separation here, and I imagine you have a differentiating factor, and that's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah. Janet, there are about 8 or 9 different janitorial franchise companies, and they are very good. It's totally different than what we do because that's all they do is janitorial. But there are a dozen lawn and landscaping franchises and Papa Lock franchises and painting franchises and window washing franchises. So all of those franchisors are in the business of teaching people how to get into the cleaning business or lawn and landscaping business. That's what a franchisor does in those types of service-related industries. We don't teach anybody how to get into the business, nor do we sell accounts to our contractors. So the franchisors typically, they teach you how to get into the business, and then they say, if you'd like help, we'll help you find the accounts, and we'll sell the accounts for you, and then you can clean the accounts yourself. That's totally different. Our people are already in business. We will go to them and say, look, I can pay you $1,000 a week to cut the grass. We don't sell you the rights to that account and then have an incentive to change you out in 6 months after you've paid us off the sale fee. You know, it's just I can't say we're in a partnership because legally that's not true, but it certainly is. There's a team effort here where we sell it and then go to those contractors. And if you've got excess capacity, great. The $1,000 a week is good money. If you don't have excess capacity, that's okay. We've got 5 other lawn and landscaping contractors in this geographical area who might be interested in servicing it. And that's kind of the way that we work with our contractors is helping them grow their business. Because what our contractors really struggle with most is they're not good with sales, so we bring them to business. They're not good with cash flow. We guarantee our contractors. In 15 years, we've never missed a contractor payday. On the 10th of every month, we pay every contractor in every city. No one's ever missed a day. So they love the fact that they get guaranteed cash flow. They love the fact that Citywide provides all the sales for them. And, you know, surprisingly, what they like almost as much, if not as much, we deal with all the client interaction. So they can stay in the field cutting grass or in the field at night cleaning and sleep during the day because we handle all the client relationships for them. So it truly is. It's a win-win situation where we're changing small business owners. We're changing the dynamics and the livelihood of their business because we're providing a service to them. We're providing the one throat to choke for the client, and the contractors are providing us an opportunity to provide 25 different services rather than just one. So very rarely do you find a business model that truly is a win-win-win. It's a win for us, it's a win for the client, and it's a win for the contractors. And that's a pretty unique scenario.
Yeah, and like you said, you can't call it a partnership, but it definitely has a partnership spirit because you all have the same interests. So What type of franchisees are you looking for? These are ones that have existing businesses or existing crews? How does that work?
No, I would say our franchisees are high-level sales executives and or general managers. What our franchisees do is we're predominantly a sales organization with a very strong client experience delivering on our promises to the end user, the client. So sales is the engine, so we want general managers who have come up the ranks through the sales channel.
Right.
We're looking for our average. We ask our franchisees today. We now ask our franchisees to sign a pledge that says you will be at $10 million in 10 years. So these are significant businesses.
Sure.
These are not
sure.
small companies, but you know, it's a significant business. And because it's a significant business, we're really looking for. If you're not a general manager, you had to be at least a COO. If you're not a COO, you should be a director of sales, somebody who has had experience with hiring and firing and leading sales teams and the operations team. And it's even better if you've had finance and HR in your background as well, because that's really what we're doing. We don't mess with the all the hourly employees. The equipment, the inventory, and the vehicles are completely outsourced to the contractors. Our franchisees focus on sales and client experience.
So do you look for, try to attract people that have some type of industry experience, or can they have completely different experience, but as long as business development is a key?
We really don't like industry experience. I know that we have people in the system that have proven us wrong, but what we find more oftentimes than not is that if you have industry experience, then you end up paying us royalties and not utilizing the home office, because you come to the table with so much experience, you think that you know it all, and you rely upon your own past experiences versus somebody who's never been in the industry. They're a blank slate, and they will call us and say, what do you think about this, this, and that? And we get to influence them at a high level on why we do what we do versus somebody coming to us from the industry. And remember, we think our model is very, very unique. So if you are used to doing it one way, it's hard to change those habits and do it our way unless you truly come to us with an open mind and wanting to learn a whole new business. So that's what we prefer, is people not in the industry.
So with that in mind, because as I said, I spent some time doing some consulting in that industry or similar to that industry. It was just the janitorial. But I was totally blinded by how much revenue is generated through all these different facility services. And I remember the first time, you know, coming home and thinking about it and saying, oh my God, I didn't even realize this industry segment existed. Of course, you know, I knew it did, and I knew the lights were on at night and people were cleaning the building, but just never thought of the magnitude of it. And I imagine there's a lot of other people out there like that. So how do you attract individuals to it that makes them say, wow, I never realized that this is what I want to do. This is great. This is a vehicle to get me to my wishes, hopes, and dreams, get me to my goals and stuff. How do you attract that type of individual when they might not even know anything about the industry segment?
Yeah, I think that's the hardest thing that we do. We've got a great story to tell. But, you know, there, and franchising, as you know, Paul, there's a couple different options. There are some franchise systems where people are buying themselves a job. They can put in $60,000, $70,000, and they have cash flow positive within just a few months, and they're going to make $100,000 or $200,000 a year. But they are the business. They're buying themselves a job. And then there are some really – and then there are some of the – concepts that cost you a lot of money, like let's say food or retail, or but those concepts will do a lot of the financing for you. But you open your doors in a restaurant, and you know you've got cash coming in right away. our model is very unique, again, from the standpoint that there are very few. As a matter of fact, I'm not really aware of any other franchises who expect their franchises to be a minimum of $10 million in revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's the best part of our business is the opportunity is huge. But the worst part of the business is the opportunity is huge from the standpoint that people will get on board and they start making more money than they've ever made before. And they say, wow, this is fantastic. I don't need to grow anymore or build a bigger business because I'm really happy making $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000, whatever the number might be, where they cap off and say, this is great. So our challenge is finding people who are truly motivated, who don't know about the industry. And we use business franchise brokers. That's predominantly what we have relied on, plus word of mouth. But it's really the hardest thing that we do is finding people who have the ability to go a year or two without an income, and then see the promised land. It's not like the franchise concepts where small dollar amount to get in. Our model costs approximately $250,000 to $300,000 all in, and it takes you about 15 months to break even. And that is a insurmountable amount of money for many people. And so when you're trying to narrow down your candidates to people who are general managers or higher level executives that come from the sales channel and have that kind of money, it truly has been our biggest challenge is finding good candidates. Thank God we've done a really good job, but we certainly have room to improve.
Sure. I imagine it is a challenge because this is not something you could just put an ad out there and get somebody to look at it for 5 seconds and get it and saying, I got it. I know what this is, like a restaurant or something like that. So certainly it's got to be more of a concentrated sale, be able to get to understand and listen to the story. So with that in mind, you have people come in, we're looking at, you know, a year to a year and a half, breaking even, get a return on their investment, start making money, as you refer to it as the looking and seeing the promised land. How do you motivate the franchisees in this type of, you know, industry where they're working in the buildings, they're not, you know, they're there when people aren't there most of the time. They're not dealing with the client. They got their nose to the grindstone. Of course, the general manager is overseeing things. But how do you motivate them? Because it seems to me that it would be very easy to get in a rut, so to speak.
Well, remember, our franchisees are not in the buildings at night cleaning. Our franchisees are not cutting grass or painting the buildings. Our franchisees are sales executives and client experience reps. So we're not in the building at nights cleaning. So
sure,
our contractors are, but our role, you know, we can't be communicating with our contractors' employees and trying to be motivating them and pumping them up. We deal with the owners of these companies, and it's the owner's responsibility to motivate their employees. Our job is to hold that contractor accountable to our client's scope of work, and if the contractor cannot perform, we are in a position to replace that contractor tomorrow or even tonight, and make it right. That's really our role as contract compliance and helping the contractors be as profitable, certainly, as they can be and enjoying the working relationship. But we're there to hold them accountable on behalf of the client.
Do the franchisees have a sales team that they're overseeing, or are they doing a lot of the sales themselves?
No, it's a sales team. You know, a $10 million company might have 20 people total.
Wow.
Four people in sales, 10 people in operations, and the rest in accounting or admin or something along those lines. So, you know, they'll have thousands of people working for them to do $10 million in revenue. They might have the contractors. They'll have, call it 100 contractors, and those 100 contractors might have 1,000 people collectively working for the contractors. But the franchisee only has, let's call it 20 people. It might be a little bit higher or lower, but it's and the people that are there are business. We boil it down to get the new accounts. So that's the sales. The operations is keep the accounts and then support the accounts. So get them, keep them, and support them is the office admin and accounting. But that's about it.
So really,
very clean cut business.
Yeah. So these individuals, clean cut. I like that, janitorial and grass cut. Clean cut.
that's
so
perfect.
Really,
you.
Yeah, it was. So really, these individuals that are franchisees, I mean, are really utilizing the skill set that and experience that they've garnered over the years in various capacities. And it's just really, and it sounds simple, but it's just really getting your story out to them. Because I imagine that when they hear the story, it definitely would have to pique their interest.
Absolutely.
So where do you see, going back, laying on the couch, where do you see Citywide
oh boy.
In the next 5 to 10 years? We're back on the couch.
Yeah, right. In 10 years, I'll be 60 years old, and so we've got a 5-year incentive and a 10-year plan, and we really believe in 10 years we'll be doing at least $1 billion and we'll be a franchise top 100 companies, and there just are not almost exclusively the top 100 franchise brands are retail and food. And so to have a service-based industry in there is going to be pretty significant. But we think that we can do that. It'll take us approximately 10 years. And I think that a rising tide, help raises lifts all boats. So it's good for everybody. And we've got a very solid plan to achieve those numbers. So that's where we're headed. Now it's time to execute on the plan. But, it's interesting. I think that 50% of the challenge really was developing the plan. Can we get there? How do we get there? But now that the plan is baked or built, it's just a matter of executing. And I think that's almost as hard as coming up with a plan. It's not easy to build a billion-dollar business.
No, and I would love to know what Pop thinks about a billion-dollar business.
He is so proud. I, honest to God, he is just so proud. And it's neat for him to be in this situation now where he comes in and he has his my mom comes in on Wednesdays, and we have the lunch I told you about. But he walks around the office. He's just a proud father, and he's supportive, and he's like the company cheerleader. He's never, ever had a bad day, and he just is excited about it. You know, I think the $1 billion is still skeptical to him. But that's a bigger number than, he's used to. But I think that they're starting to see that this is not just pie in the sky. This is attainable. It's going to be a lot of hard work. But I think he believes that it can be done.
That's,
I know we do.
Awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. So obviously there's life outside of business for you. I read that your family is your number one priority. Obviously, they see what's going on. I imagine, holidays and get-togethers has a lot of people sitting around the table. Does business get spoken at those events, or is it just family time?
No, more than we would like. I don't want to say workaholics because I think that's a negative connotation, but we thoroughly enjoy what we do. So when we are together, unfortunately, we talk more business than we probably should. None of us really have passions for swimming or biking or race cars or golfing. You know, we enjoy our work and we enjoy our family. We all have hobbies, of course, but when we get together, there's a lot of business, and especially now that the kids, my dad has 9 grandchildren now, and they're getting to the age where they're talking about college and possibly coming into one of the businesses, and so you see the next generation starting to want to talk up to Pawpaw about, hey, so tell me what it was like and what did my dad do, and so it's kind of fun to hear them actually showing an interest now.
It is. I'm so passionate about, you know, the younger generation and entrepreneurship. I could just imagine what those conversations must be like, and you're definitely blessed to be part of them. So I read an interesting thing. You're also an author of a book called The 10 Kid Mandates. I have to say that. So The 10 Kid Mandates. Tell us about that. I mean, that's, you know, kind of in a different direction here.
Yes. Well, you know, I going back to that Vistage group, my very first meeting in Vistage was the president of Porsche came and spoke to us, Howard Schultz, and he told us this amazing story, and my wife and I were pregnant with our first child at the time, and I thought, gosh, that's fabulous. So I wanted to remember that story to tell my child. And so I wrote the story down in my BlackBerry. And next month was the president of Rawlings Sportswear. He happened to have a fabulous story. Now, of course, they're talking about all business. But I'm at the mindset now, I'm going to have my first child. I'm so excited. And this story would be a great story for me to tell my children. So I typed that in my BlackBerry. Well, fast forward 14 years later, I've got some great, great stories that I want to share with my children, and somebody a different speaker came and said, everybody should write a book. Do you know what your book would be? And I said, aha, I know exactly what my book would be. And so I wrote it really for myself. I wanted to be a better husband and a better father and be the best that I could be. And going out and doing the research and interviewing people and studying would force me to be better. And you know, I hope that it would be wildly successful. All the proceeds go to help single working women. And unfortunately, I've got pallets of books still sitting in the warehouse that it's proven, Paul, to be harder to sell the darn thing than it was 14 years to write it.
So, you know, franchising, as we know, is all about relationships and certainly interdependent relationships. As you said earlier, win, win, win. Certainly there's the interdependency. But, you know, listen to you talk, you know, family, you know, the bigger picture to family with your dad and your mom, and then, of course, your brothers. And then, of course, what you're giving to your kids. And it's no wonder that you're successful and your family's successful in franchising, because you guys epitomize the best of relationships, I'd have to say.
Well, thank you. That's very nice of you to say.
Well, you know, I like to call it as I see it. It's been so long.
You know what? You've earned yourself a free copy of my book. How about that? That's how much I appreciate your compliment.
I would love to read that. I would love to read that. This has just been a great time spending with you. Imagine you're a pretty busy man, and we're going to keep you off the couch. You seem to kind of shy away from
that's
that
right.
couch for a while.
Yeah. That's right. That's don't want my dad still catching me.
Yeah, I wish you continued success, and hopefully one day we'll cross paths, I'm sure. It's interesting that, you know, I had gotten your name from All Points PR, and then you and I talked last week, and it had nothing to do with the show. So, yeah, that's the great thing about franchising. There's so many people, but this is a great story, and I got to tell you, I'll be repeating it. And here's the great thing, even greater thing about it, Jeff. So many people use the information that we put out on Franchise Day, and I've been doing it now for 7.5 years, over 300 episodes. And I've had everybody, just every walk of life in franchising, and it is all about, you know, the great thing we call franchising. It is all about relationships. So you can rest assured there's some young franchisors or maybe even individuals that are thinking about entering franchising from a franchisor perspective that's going to listen to this show, and it is going to make an impact. There's no doubt.
Great. Well, I sure hope so. That would be wonderful to hear.
That would
appreciate
be great.
All that you're doing as well. You're doing a great service for all of us out there. I love your show and appreciate all that you put into it.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it. So next
have a
week,
great day.
Thank you. Next week, we'll be back here. Ken McAllister from Sweet Management Franchising. Sweet is S-U-I-T-E, not S-W-E-E-T. Will be my guest next week. Stan will be back off the road, I imagine, for a little bit of time. So until next week, my name is Paul Segretta, wishing you the best, the very best in this great, great thing we call franchising. And Franchise Today is out.